First watch passed without incident, and the exhausted Ryan was only too glad to hand over second watch to Mildred and JB. It was unusual to take a watch in pairs, but both had agreed that neither would rest that easy in the forest that night. The night above was clear. Yet much of the light from stars and the moon couldn't filter through the canopy of foliage cast by the forest. JB and Mildred were both on edge. They had little doubt that Affinity had been serious about the night crawlers. Every slight rustle, every trick of the shadows, became something that made their nerve endings jangle. For much of the watch, they avoided each other, dividing the area around the camp into two individual 180-degree arcs. After nearly two nervous hours, both felt that they were at breaking point. As their patrol arcs came close to each other, Mildred moved across into JB's territory.
What is it, Millie?
Chill, John. There isn't a problem. I'm just getting a little too strung out on my own. I'm going to be thinking my own breathing is a freaking nightcrawler if I'm not careful.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I haven't felt this paranoid since I was left alone with a bunch of stickies on human fry night.
The sooner morning comes, the better, I figure. This is playing hell on both our nerves.
You can say that again.
The nightcrawlers could hear someone in the forest. Someone other than those they sought. The runaways who had established the Rogueville of Memphis were too scared to be out in the forest at this time of night. Yet there were so rarely strangers who traversed these lands. Atlantis had been deliberately established so that it could hide from the prying eyes of intruders, far into the forest and near the coast, where there were no major routes that would bring convoys and invite unwelcome detention. Whoever these people were, they had taken a lot of trouble to come this far. It was a shame that they couldn't take the extra trouble to be quiet and protect themselves. A vulpine grin crossed the face of the first warrior. This would be easy. The strangers were making their position all too clear, and they would never hear a Sekforce as experienced in the sounds of the forest as the crawlers. The crawler turned and looked back, his night-adjusted eyes picking out the seven others in his pack. No one else would be able to spot them in this darkness, but he knew where they would be. Was so used to the shadows that he could pick out the most infinitesimal change in depth and width of blackness, and had a sense of smell so highly attuned to the forest floor that he could even smell them. As were his fellows, he was covered from head to foot in mud and paint. His tight-fitting tunic dyed to blend with his decorated skin. His hair was oiled and smoothed back to his scalp, and in his eyes he wore lenses that had been made by special craftsmen. They were of a darkened glass, so that his eyes wouldn't reflect light. Each time he wore them, they wore away at his eyes a little more, so that he would have immense pain and blurred vision by the time he was 5 years older. But it was worth it to serve the greater cause in this way, and he would be rewarded, as all surviving crawlers were rewarded. While others slaved at construction, the crawlers were awarded a pension for the services they had offered to their people. The more recaptures and kills they had to their name, the greater the pension. So far, his pension was good. That was why he was group leader, in charge of the operation. He had left it until the stiller watches of the night, as he was aware of the juvenile efforts of the Memphis Sekforce to keep his people at bay by mounting their ridiculous patrols. They offered no real threat, but a few crawlers had been injured during skirmishes, and the irritation they caused was something that the crawlers could do without. They had stopped day attacks by the crawlers, but as the Memphis Sek were too scared to be in the forest at night, all they had really achieved was to make their enemy concentrate on the time when they were at their most dangerous. In a sense, they had served the crawlers well. This contingent of night crawlers had 5 men and 3 women. All were dressed identically, with camo robes, body paint, dark lenses for their eyes, and laced leather thongs dyed black and soled with rubber. All had their hair slicked back. Those whose natural hair color was lighter had dyed it dark, and those with long hair had it plaited. They were armed with blades. Blasters were too loud, and stealth was their watchword. Of course, carrying a blaster didn't mean that you had to use it, but in an extreme situation, the temptation may prove to be too strong, and subterfuge was paramount. So they carried Tecna and Wilkinson's sword hunting knives, as well as machetes and pongas. Each blade was sharpened and polished, with the resultant shine being dulled by the same kind of camo paint that they used on their bodies. The sheaths were oiled and tied to their bodies to prevent accidental collision and clanging of blades. They moved independently of one another, hugging tree boles and moving at a crouch between the cover. They knew the forest well, and knew that, as there was no animal life to disturb it, the contours of the forest changed little with the seasons. In fall, they had dry leaves underfoot, and this made it the hardest time of year to ply their trade. But now, with a canopy overhead adding to the dark, and little on the surface of the woods to make a sound beneath their footfalls, it was easy for them to move quickly. 8 pairs of ears identified the direction of JB and Mildred's conversation. 8 pairs of eyes focused in the almost pitch-black darkness on the area they had to cover. Even in this poor light, and with a stranger's earlier fire having been extinguished, they were able to discern different levels of dark as they saw the two move together, talk, and then move apart. The leader stopped grinning. His teeth would stand out in such absolute blackness. Nothing would break the shadow of his face as he began to move toward the companions, knowing without even looking back that his fellow crawlers were on his tail. These strangers wouldn't know what had hit them. Christy was having a nightmare, trapped in the tentacles of an octopus that was dragging her beneath the waves. She lashed out and had jetted a stream of dark ink into the water as it sought to protect itself from her blows. The darkness engulfed her in a swirl, the cold water becoming so dark she no longer knew which way was up, but she was sinking into the dark. She woke with a jolt and could feel her hair tight around her head and throat. It was more than the nightmare that was making her feel this way. She sat up and looked around her. She could hear JB and Mildred talking in a low whisper, and as her eyes adjusted to the faint light, she could see them. They appeared to have everything under control, and yet something had hit her right in her doomy sense. She didn't know what, but it was there. And she wasn't alone. As she watched Mildred and JB, she became aware that Jack had also stirred.
Shh!
Jack's red eyes burned in the darkness, the faint light making his white, scarred face translucent.
Stoop talking. It'd cover all else.
Where are they?
Circling Mildred and JB. Can smell shit on their skin to make them dark. Almost can't hear them. Shoot, nothing that quiet.
Christy was on her feet, although keeping low.
Get Mildred and JB. I'll wake the others triple fast. If you can hear them, you can bet your ass that they've already heard us moving.
The lead crawler saw 2 people rise from the group that lay beyond the 2 already standing. That made at least 4. No matter, however many they had, they would be no match for his people. Silently, as one, they moved into attacking positions, each instinctively knowing where the others had gone. They quickened their pace and pulled their blades.
I can see them.
Where?
In a line, Millie. Right at 3 o'clock to 6. Coming quick.
JB slipped the mini Uzi into position and set it to rapid. He had no idea if he'd hit anyone, but the purpose of the blast was to try to delay the night crawlers. Ryan had already been awakened by Christy. He sprang to his feet, forsaking the Steyr and pulling the Panga from its sheath. Doc and Affinity were also roused, while Jack was directing JB and Mildred to pull back into the central camp area.
Dark night. We're sitting targets if we do that.
I think not. They never use blasters, only knives, and they always work in close.
They fell into silence, straining every fiber to catch the slightest sound made by their attackers. There was nothing. The companions scanned the darkness, only Jack able to detect anything.
Still where they were. Can smell them. When we move, they move too.
Could try to fire on them again. A quick burst of spray and pray might catch them before they can move.
Yeah, and in the noise and confusion, they get to move out of position. At least this way we know where they are. Let them make the first move. Jack had slipped knives to Christy and Mildred. JB had his Tecna, and Affinity and Doc had both unsheathed their blades. They stood as still as their opponents. The silence beyond the camp became oppressive, and time slowed.
Here they come!
Before they had a chance to ready themselves, the Nightcrawlers were upon them. The combat was almost silent. It was as though the companions were fighting phantoms. But they were definitely human. They stank of body paint, and they were slippery with sweat and blood where the blades caught them. With the dark lenses over their eyes, they were almost impossible to pin down visually, and it was difficult to tell where their blows were coming from. A blade sliced at Ryan's upper arm.
Ah, damn it!
Jack caught the point of one blade under his eye. He ignored it and struck home with a blow before his opponent had a chance to adjust balance. Jack was just thankful that the cut was under his eye. Above, and the running blood would have made vision difficult. Christy and Mildred were faring well. They also landed a few body blows that took a toll on their opponents. Doc thrust and parried with his sword, grinning maniacally as though enjoying the combat, particularly when he felt one thrust penetrate into flesh deeply enough to stick. His opponent slumped almost noiselessly to the ground. They had no idea how long they fought or how well they were doing. It seemed as though their opponents were endless. And yet the Nightcrawlers were used to fighting much inferior opponents and were shocked at the skills of those they now tangled with. So much so that they began to withdraw. They melted into the darkness as smoothly as they had first materialized. It was some time before the companions and Affinity could relax. They expected the Nightcrawlers to come at them as soon as they showed any sign of weakness. But as time crept on, it became apparent that their opponents had withdrawn. Comparing notes, they were sure that at least one of the Nightcrawlers had been badly wounded, the one skewered by Doc, and that two or three others had also taken heavy blows. For themselves, there were only a few cuts and bruises that Mildred could easily tend to when the sun came up. When light finally broke, there was no sign of any of their opponents. Doc was pretty certain his opponent was dead. If so, the Nightcrawlers had taken the corpse with them. Apart from a few dark patches of blood on the floor of the camp and some splashes on the nearest clumps of foliage, there was no sign of disturbance. Nothing to indicate that they had been attacked. It was as though it had never happened. The Sect party stood back in cover when they heard the noises from the woods. There were four of them in the party, and they were all dressed in the same white robes as Affinity. Using the dense woodlands as shelter, they stepped into shadow and waited as the sounds grew nearer.
Mark, do you think that they're Nightcrawlers?
Barely out of his teens, the clean-shaven Philo had only escaped from Atlantis a few months before and was keen to prove himself. Despite this, he could feel his legs begin to shake as the strangers approached.
Idiot, have you ever heard a crawler make so much noise even when they thought there was nobody around to hear them? They know we have sect patrols now, and they would be ever more vigilant.
Mark was nearing 30 and had been in Memphis for more than 5 years. He had lost several family members in his escape and was filled with a burning desire for revenge against the regime of Atlantis. That had driven him to rise rapidly to head of sect for Memphis. Not that there was a lot of competition. He sometimes felt, particularly at times like this, that he was almost fighting alone. Philo stayed silent, although he felt slighted. What other explanation could there be, other than the approaching strangers were crawlers? Those who had returned on the previous day had spoken of those they encountered as being strong fighters, but not garbed as was the norm for crawlers. Perhaps this was a change in tactics by the men of Atlantis to counter the measure shown by Memphis. After all, who else could it be in these woodlands? The sect party stayed silent, letting the strangers come to them. These crawlers, if indeed they were, made no attempt to conceal themselves. Mark showed himself to the others long enough to mutely direct his men into position for an ambush. He had determined the direction of the approaching party and wanted to make sure they were surrounded. Crawlers were tricky, slippery fighters. His men were probably outnumbered from the sound of it, and there was every chance that they would be outfought. But Mark was a great believer in the element of surprise. He had little idea that in this instance, it would be himself on the receiving end. As the four sect men adopted their new positions and readied themselves for attack, Philo tried to calm himself by concentrating on picking out the words spoken by the approaching party. His guts were churning with fear, and he supposed that to try to decipher their conversation would act as a distraction. They were far enough away for the talk to be little more than a low buzz, but within a few seconds he had adjusted to the volume and could pick out a few words.
Methods of destruction and the tactics involved are sometimes indicative of an intelligence that is little more than misguided.
Doc, you talk such crap sometimes. The only thing any of us can ever think about is survival. That's the triple red priority.
My dear Dr. Wyeth, one must always consider beyond the knee-jerk reaction. It is the ability to think rationally and translate this into tactics that actually wins wars. Staying alive is one thing.
Can't win wars if dead.
Exactly my point. I am most definitely not saying that tactics are unnecessary. Indeed, if Ryan were not a tactician, we would have long since been killed. But the first priority is to keep moving and keep breathing.
I appreciate your willingness to enter into debate so freely, but if you are to be moving on, I fail to see how it can be of any practical consideration.
A little learning never hurt anyone.
One of the voices was very familiar. It couldn't be. He had been taken by the crawlers the day before and was considered lost.